The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Now, the thing about hate is that it's a really strong word, and it's pretty easy for me to say I don't hate. More about that later. So there's a fairly new translation of a Buddhist scripture called the Dhammapada that was a translation done by Gil Fronstall, who is our senior teacher here. And it is a collection of teaching verses from the earliest days of Buddhism, the Dhammapada. The verse repeated by Gosananda and quoted by Jack Kornfield is from this document, the Dhammapada. But Gill's translation is just a little different. So I'm going to start a couple of verses before because I think they're important to this discussion. He abused me, attacked me, defeated me, robbed me. For those carrying on like this, hatred does not end. She abused me, attacked me, defeated me, robbed me. For those not carrying on like this, hatred ends. Hatred never ends by hatred. By non-hate alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. So in his translation, instead of translating the Pali word avara as hate, as love, he translated it as non-hate. And this is actually pretty significant. When in Pali, the word for hatred is vera, V-E-R-A, vera. And when you put an A in front of that, that means the opposite of that word, or it negates that word. So avara is the word. And in other places in Buddhist texts, they refer to this word as the absence of hate or the presence of loving kindness and patience. Seems to me this is a more complex meaning than simply saying love. When we say love, we have all kinds of ideas about what that means. And that it's, in a way, it can kind of gloss over what's actually happening. Love will end this. There's something very lofty about it. But if you use the word non-hate, there's a different feeling that comes into the world because of that way of talking about it. And it has more to do with what do we have in our hearts. So if I say to myself, well, I don't really hate them, that's probably true. But do I have hostility toward them? Oh, probably. Ill will and hostility. Those are characteristics that can color what happens in the world also. They may not sound as overweening as hatred, but they have a lot to do with what goes on in our hearts and how we deal with hatred in the world and anger in the world and irritation with what goes on. So how do we struggle against injustice and remain free of hostility? How do we do that? So here are two responses to the events in Burma. One of them is from the Dalai Lama. And the two responses I want to read to you illustrate different ways of looking at the same thing. Okay? So this is from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And this was before the crackdown. So here's what he had to say. I extend my support and solidarity with the recent peaceful movement for democracy in Burma. I fully support their call for freedom and democracy and take this opportunity to appeal to freedom-loving people all over the world to support such nonviolent movements. Moreover, I wish to convey my sincere appreciation and admiration to the large number of fellow Buddhist monks for advocating democracy and freedom in Burma. As a Buddhist monk, I'm appealing to the members of the military regime who believe in Buddhism to act in accordance with the sacred Dharma in the spirit of compassion and nonviolence. I pray for the success of this peaceful movement and the early release of my fellow Nobel Peace Laureate, Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been in house arrest in Burma for the last 18 years. Now notice he didn't condemn the military. He just said, yay for you, monks. This is the right thing to do. And please pay attention to them. That's really all he said. So now here's a different response. This is a letter of appeal from Venerable Ajahn Sumedho, who was trained in Burma and is now in England. I am making a statement of support and sympathy for the heroic efforts of the Buddhist monks, nuns, students, and all the Burmese lay people who are peacefully protesting against the injustice and oppression of the present government of Myanmar. It is very confusing and distressing to witness a government which claims to respect the Buddhist religion react to a peaceful protest in such a violent and brutal way. I have always held the Sangha in Burma with great respect. I ask the present government to listen to the Sangha and to seek a way of reconciliation in accord with the Dhamma, which will be for the welfare and happiness of all. I send my blessings to the peaceful protesters and my compassion to the government of Myanmar, which has strayed so far from the wisdom and compassion of the Lord Buddha. There are several really interesting things about that. He stands up and he says, this is what's right and this is what's wrong. But he doesn't condemn anybody. He doesn't really take sides. He says, it's confusing and distressing. He acknowledges the turmoil. He doesn't say, I am outraged by this. He doesn't say that. It's a very considered response. This is distressing and confusing. How can this be happening? He talks about what he knows about himself. This is how I feel. That's very important. This is how I feel. To be in touch with that, to be aware of how you actually feel, can take precedence over that automatic response that gets you into playing into the drama of the event. Then he said, I asked the government to listen. I asked them to listen. To seek a way of reconciliation for the welfare and happiness of all. Send blessings to the protesters and compassion to the government. That's fairly even-handed. I'm sure he feels very strongly about this. Suppose the government honestly believes that what they're doing is maintaining the stability of the environment. You know, is it possible to understand why they're doing this? How can they be doing this? It's very easy to ascribe pretty negative motivations to them, frankly. It's very easy. Ajahn Sumedho is known for a particular gesture and phrase that he uses very commonly. And he says, it's like this. It's like this. And it's acknowledgement of him that the important thing is to be aware of what truly is, not wishing it to be different, not pretending that it's different, not rejecting it, not being aversive to it, not holding on to it. It's like this. Anger is like this. Fear is like this. Knowing that, recognizing it, being aware of whatever the feeling is an important part of being able to control what's going on with your emotional life and what is going on in your reaction to what you may perceive as hatred and oppression. It's like this, being in touch with that. What he says is, when the conditions for anger arise, it's like this. Likewise, fear, the primal emotion of the animal realm. But the awareness of lust, greed, the awareness of anger, the awareness of hatred and fear, that is your refuge. Your refuge is in the awareness. How do we hang out in the realm of this detached place without giving in to hostility? I'm so uncomfortable with the word hate that I just can't relate to it. You know, I don't hate anybody. I don't hate anything. But I certainly have feelings of hostility and ill will. Those come up. I know those feelings. And so by using words like hate and love, it's pretty easy to just sort of knock everything out of the way and not really pay attention to what's actually happening, not being aware of what's truly sitting with you. That's the important part, being aware of what truly is. So non-hate, non-hostility, what is it? It's not pushing the emotions away, because that actually just gives them energy. So it's not pushing them away. You can't push it away or deny it. That really doesn't work. It just comes up in another way. Once when I was on retreat, I had spent the first week of this retreat in a metta retreat. So metta practice is a practice of reinforcing good wishes for yourself and others, wishing well for yourself and others. After a week of doing this, you feel pretty soft, pretty open, pretty concentrated. It's really a very beautiful place. So I was feeling pretty soft, pretty open. And then I did a week of insight meditation, Vipassana meditation. And about halfway through the week, I was overcome with this incredible anger, really big anger. I thought, oh, my God, I don't even belong here. And I went back to my room, and I was throwing pillows around the room. I was furious. And I was angry that I was angry. I was, how could I be angry about this thing? This thing that I was angry about, what had happened 6 years before. And I was so upset by the anger. It was just overwhelming. And I went to see the teacher. The teacher that I saw was Steve Armstrong. And Steve said, whatever you do, don't do metta. Do not push this anger away. Stay with that anger and get to know that anger until you know that anger inside and out. And I thought, what do you mean don't push it away? It's okay to be angry? So I did. I looked at the anger and I felt that anger and it hurt. That surprised me more than anything. You know, I'm used to thinking of anger as an outward focused thing. But in truth, anger really hurt. And it was such a surprise to me. I learned so much about that. And I realized that probably the people around me, even though I didn't act out my anger, could feel that anger. People around me could feel that. And that was very humbling for me. And in the process of looking at that anger so closely, it stopped having the power that it had. Because I stopped telling the story around the anger. You know, I'm angry about this thing. And I was listing all the injustices, right? Reinforcing that story, playing that story over and over again. And every time it sort of dies down, you start the story up again. But if you're not doing that story, if you're just paying attention to what the feeling is of that anger, feeling the energy of the anger, what it's doing in your body, what it's saying to you, the anger loses its energy, it loses its power. And it shifted. It shifted into a really great sadness based on the insights that I had about how I felt about that anger and how other people must have felt about that anger. But because I stopped the story that was feeding it, it went away. I didn't do it by pushing it away. I wasn't willing it away. I just stopped feeding it. And we can do that. Now, under those conditions, it was kind of idealized conditions, right? You're on retreat. There's not much else to think about. You're not having a constant stimulation of whatever it was that was causing the anger. But the important thing is once you know something, you can't stop knowing it. So now I know a lot about anger. And when it arises in me, I recognize it sooner. I can name it. I can say, oh, anger. And I know I don't want to stay with it. and I know what causes it to continue is feeding the story. So I can still choose to feed the story, and sometimes do. But at least I know now. And that's the important thing, is when you become aware of something, then you have choices you can make about it. And that's the sense in which Ajahn Sumedho said, awareness is your refuge. So I want to give you another example of working with non-hate that's kind of a little closer than Burma. I live out in West Marin, and I'm a pretty strong environmentalist. And there are a number of environmental issues out in West Marin that have a lot of controversy associated with them. So there is one particular person who I felt was particularly vicious on the other side. And I had all kinds of judgments about this man. I didn't like his methods. He certainly had a much better grasp of public relations and how to get the public behind his point of view. And I got to the point where every time I started driving toward town, my shoulders would tighten up and my jaw would tighten, and I was like I was girding for battle, and I was just driving to town, you know? My opponent, whom I had never met, had become the embodiment of evil. Everything about him was bad. Oh, that guy. After a while, I realized that I was really making myself unhappy, that I was suffering a lot, and he didn't even know it. So I was ascribing all this power to him, and it was really all my creation. He had nothing to do with it. I was creating my own unhappiness, and I was allowing it to color my life to the point that I couldn't drive to town without my shoulders getting tight. And I wasn't changing the outcome of anything except my own happiness. So I decided that I had some control over that and that I was going to stop doing that. And I also decided that he was a person. Surprise, surprise. And that, in fact, I didn't know him. Didn't know why he was taking the positions he was taking, even if I disagreed with them. So then one day, I was down at the local farmer's market, and there was a table that had some letters to be signed to go to the supervisor. So I went over to the table to see what that was all about. And lo and behold, he came over to the table to talk about the letter. Now, if I hadn't already come to the conclusion that he was human, I probably would have just walked away from the table as soon as I saw him. That's how strongly I disapproved of this person I had never met. And he's actually a very nice guy. We talked about the letter. I disagreed with him on the letter, but it wasn't a hostile exchange, and it was kind of normal. And I was really happy about that. So we're still on the opposite sides of this environmental issue, but I no longer see him as the embodiment of evil. I still stand up and say I think he's wrong, but I don't ascribe all these other evil tendencies to him. It's not useful. It's not saving me, and the opposite was making me unhappy. So I hadn't thought about it this way, but I was really practicing non-hate. Practicing non-hate. And it is a practice. It's definitely a practice. You know, one of the things that happens when we deal with injustice is there's a tendency to want to get even. Maybe subtle. But you're going to get yours. Go ahead and be that way. You'll pay eventually, right? I mean, there's just a little piece of that somewhere. And in a difficult situation, we're prone to want to settle the score, you know? We want them to feel what we feel, right? There's a real tendency toward that. It's really, to notice that is important. Because that actually is ill will. It's not love. It's not hatred. But there's that sort of, I want you to get yours kind of feeling that comes up. It's a very natural thing to happen. But do we want to live there? That's the question. So I'll give you an example of this that recently happened to me. I had a week of really bad car karma. And I had taken my car in. So now, as I tell you this, what I'm going to do is tell you the story. And telling you the story, what I'm going to do is give you all the reasons why I was justified in being angry, right? I'm going to tell you the story. So I have to be careful about that. I have to laugh so that I don't create in my mind more drama around the injustice. Okay, so I had taken my car in and the for service, regular service. Paid a lot of money for this service. And a week later, your brake linings light came on. Your brake linings are gone light came on. And they had told me I had 7,000 miles left on my brakes. And I was furious. And I brought my car back in, which is a pretty big deal. It's not convenient to leave your car at the dealer 2 weeks in a row. And there's probably this long list of total unimportant, absolutely insurmountable things. I was just furious. And the more I told myself the story, every time I felt the energy going down, I felt like I had to tell the story to myself again to justify why I'd been angry the first time, therefore reinforcing the anger. Uh-oh. How many times am I going to tell the story, put the anger back in my heart, just because I had to fix my brakes? You know? I mean, there are injustices that happen. There are conditions that occur. But all of this feeding back on it isn't going to change that. You can only change things going forward. You can't change things that have already happened. So why put all the energy into that? That's what I was doing. That's the emotional reactivity to something happening that is not what I want. So when I finally figured out what I was doing, I realized that there I was sitting in the coffee shop waiting for my car to get ready, steaming. And I said, whew, boy, this feels terrible. And then I recognized that, oh, this feels terrible feeling. And said, wait a minute, nobody's doing this but me. Yeah, the inconvenience of the car already happened, but all this steaming stuff I was creating, I was just generating a lot of ill will and anger. So there's a possibility when you say, I'm feeling this, to kind of take responsibility for what happens next. It's really an opportunity to say, the buck stops here, and I don't have to keep feeding this, and I don't have to keep going with it. I can stop and just sit with the underlying uneasiness. I'm unhappy about this. And understand something about that unhappiness. What's causing that unhappiness? Being aware of whatever that feeling is. By doing that, you interrupt the momentum. You pause. And it changes everything. You just pause. And I'm sure you've experienced this. You're talking to somebody and it's getting more and more heated. You know, it's one of those I said, you said kind of arguments that's going. And the first person who pauses actually creates a space for something else to happen. But if you keep going, then it just keeps escalating, right? Just keeps going. But the first person who pauses is introducing a whole different energy into the exchange, which gives you a different possibility for the outcome. You may not solve the problem, but you're not making it worse. You're not adding to your own suffering by doing that. So perhaps all we can do in the world is have some control over what we hold in our hearts. If we have peace in our hearts, we can have peace in ourselves. If we have peace in ourselves, we can have peace in our family. If we have peace in our family, we can have peace in our neighborhood, in our communities. It all starts in here, not out there. Peace doesn't start with the military suddenly deciding they're going to let the monks march in the streets in Myanmar. It starts right here in Maria's heart, not building up the story over how angry she is that she has to do her breaks. Wow. Thoughts come and go. We have the choice which ones we're going to act on. One of my friends today was talking to me about a problem she had where she's made a bad investment. And she was really unhappy about this bad investment. She's 65, 66 years old. This is not a good time for, she's retired. It's not a good time for her to suddenly find that she's made a really, really bad investment. And she was really angry about it and upset. And she finally realized that the first step was that she wasn't admitting that she'd done it. She wasn't admitting it was true. She kept saying, this just can't be true. It can't be true. So finally she said, ah, you know what? It's true. Oh, how could I have been so stupid? What a terrible mistake. So the next thing that happened, first there was resistance. The next thing that happened was blame. And there are two kinds of blame. We either blame someone else or we blame ourselves. But that's another thing that happens when something happens we don't like, is we right away start in with the blame. It's either my fault or it's your fault. It's somebody's fault. When in fact, it's just a condition. So as we were talking about this, I said, why is it your fault? Nobody deliberately makes a bad investment. Do you know anybody who deliberately makes a bad investment? I suppose there are people, but they're not very common. You do what you think is the right thing at the time. And once again, all the blame about what's already been done isn't going to help what happens in the future. So there's resistance, there's blame, and there's accepting the condition. It just is. It's like this. It's like this. The same anger arises. It's like this. Anger is like this. So that we don't have to blame or inculcate that more in ourselves. Because the more we replay the story about how bad it is or how bad we were or about your blame or my blame, the more we're practicing anger in our hearts. I don't want to practice anger. I already know it hurts. I want to practice something else. So you have to stop practicing it. But the first thing you have to do is recognize it. First thing you have to do is see it. Also from the Dhammapada, all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind and suffering follows. As the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox, all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never-departing shadow. Beautiful, isn't it? It's also from the Dhammapada. So there was a story in the Harvard Medical Review about a Tibetan doctor named Tenzin Chodak. And Dr. Chodak was a guest of the Chinese government for 21 years, 17 years of those of that time, he was tortured and threatened with death. But he survived it. He came out of it. And he said he had four insights about this stress. The first one is, he says, see each situation in a larger context. In particular for him, he said, this was a teacher for me. Now, I'm not going to tell you that's easy. Somebody recently said to me about something I was talking about, oh, this is a great learning experience for you. And I thought, oh, save me from the learning experience, right? But if you can, in fact, look at it that way, if you can step back enough to see the larger picture, then it becomes less pointedly personal. You can put it in a larger context. That was one. The second one was see difficult people as human beings. You know, everybody just wants to be happy. Everybody just wants to be happy. Seeing the difficult person as a human being goes a long way toward resolving the differences between you. Because as soon as you make them an other, then you're setting up something that is an unresolvable difference. See them as human beings. Number three, let go of pride and feelings of self-importance. How could they be doing this to me? So much anger is related to a perceived insult or being discounted. Nobody likes to be discounted. I hate it myself. I find it a very difficult thing to deal with. But is it important? It's a matter of pride and self-importance. Dr. Chodak believed that letting go of self-righteousness was what kept him alive. 21 years. Letting go of self-righteousness. I can imagine it would be pretty easy to be very self-righteous when you're in prison, imprisoned for such a long time. How could they be doing this? What have I ever done to them? And the fourth, his fourth insight was, hatred never ceases by hatred. Those were the four things. See a larger context. See the difficult person as a human being. Let go of your pride and self-importance. And remember, hatred never ceases by hatred. Every time we get angry, we're practicing anger. Every time we feel love or a loving act, we're practicing love. We're practicing goodwill. When we can think of it this way, we can go to our place of deepest intention. It's a very powerful place to be. We can practice non-hating. We can't push away hate, but we can practice not telling the story. We can practice letting the story go so that we can find that sense of awareness of where, what is true. It's like this. It's like this. And go on from there. Pause. Just pause. It's not a lot. It won't solve everything. Just pause. Hatred never ends by hatred. By non-hate alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. May all beings be free of ill will. May all beings be peaceful. Thank you. So do you have any thoughts about this? Does it make any sense? Questions, comments?
I was, quite interested and learned a lot from what you had to say. The issues like you were bringing up about when you, had the people do all the repair work and then all sorts of things hadn't turned out right and all that, I can sure relate to that. But and I'm wondering about the, it is a challenge how to, how do you try to right whatever wrong you think took place without thinking you have to get all, antagonistic and hostile to whoever did it? I could see we tend to all fall into that, when something like that happens. Like, I guess you're, partly like you say, we kind of get indignant and we think, sort of our ego, I guess, gets into it. We feel like we've been wronged. So then that was a good good lesson or way of showing how we could realize, we could deal with it, something like that, but without having to get all hostile. We just have to figure out how to bring it, try to elicit the cooperation of the people to remedy whatever it is they didn't do right, I guess. Yeah. So thanks.
It's a challenge. I'd like to tell you that I had a totally evolved and enlightened way of dealing with it, but I see it more as a lesson in my life than that. It's not necessary to say it's okay. It's not okay. You have to be able to say, this was not right. This was not done correctly. This is not acceptable. But to do that without churning, you know, it's that churning that causes suffering. Also, I had to look at the service coordinator. They don't call him that. The service advisor, I can't think what they have some cute name for this poor guy who had to deal with me when I came back. And I remember saying to myself, you know, it isn't Kevin's fault. Kevin didn't fail to do whatever happened. Kevin just happens to be the guy out front. And it's very important to make that distinction. Kevin didn't do this to me. So in talking to him, I have to be able to say, this was not right, shouldn't have happened. And then Kevin, when Kevin responds, Kevin can think, well, why is she telling me this? Now, I have no control over his response, right? So then, suppose he says, well, this was your fault. Okay, now I have cause to be irritated with him. So then it becomes very important to not transfer the anger from the former thing to some new guy who's just trying to do his job. And it's easy to do that. And the way to do that is to continue telling the story. To continue being indignant, you know. Okay? So the more aware you are of where you are, the fewer of those errors you're going to make. So I was not hard on Kevin, but I did call the service manager and say, this service was totally inadequate and I expect a call back. So that's what I did. And I had my brakes fixed because I wanted my brakes fixed. So in that case, you know, I have to say there are it's important to be able to say, this is where I stand. That's how I felt about marching down Market Street. This is where I stand. But you don't have to do it in a way that is hostile. It doesn't have to be hostile.
Back on what you were talking about, the way I look at it psychologically through psychology is it's the instance where you were maybe not passive-aggressive and maybe not overreactive, but reactive. And the way I've learned this is that the way you said it, it's like this. Mm-hmm. It's kind of you have to be proactive, where you're responsive and respectful, and you take action, but there's no personality. There's a principle of just a correction of error. It's nothing personal. It's just the way it is. So as a matter of fact, you have to go back and rectify it and change it by having it taken care of. And that's just the way the world is.
It needs to be clean. You know, that's kind of how I think about it. So that you don't add on extra stuff, lots of extra baggage. If it's a very clean interaction, this is what's true. This is what needs to fix it. Now, the other person may not see it the same way. Then you have to invoke some of the other, this is a human being I'm talking to. You don't have to always come to agreement to have a skillful interaction. What's important is what happens in your heart. What's going on in here? And that's always a clue for me. I know I'm getting off base when I'm feeling that kind of curdly feeling inside. I know I'm getting off base. When I feel a tension and a kind of boiling feeling, I know I'm getting off base. It's not clear. Well, it's actually a physical feeling that tells me what's happening with my emotions.
When you get off base, what are you meaning, sort of straying away from
trying to just be with the facts of the situation or something. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I mean. What I mean is I'm losing track of what is, and yeah. I'm getting lost in a story.
Oh, yeah, I see.
That churning
yeah.
part. I'm getting lost yeah. in a story. I'm yeah. telling a story about this, and I'm really getting involved in the drama, building yeah. up the drama of the event.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you. The lecture tonight was very on point for me. Someone very dear to me, one of my parents, is having a significant relationship ending, and she's very angry right now. And I'm kind of struggling with being there, and yet I'm so glad to be here because a lot of the anger is just the story of 25 years and rehashing the story, and that therefore strengthens the anger because behind the anger is a lot of sadness and grief and remorse and all the other things. So I have a question. Going forward, your suggestions on being present in this difficult situation for her, my mom, but not encouraging rehashing the story, not reinforcing the story, because it's just keeping her stuck in this really angry space that she's in.
You know, I can tell you that the better thing is for her not to rehash the story, but I'll also tell you that she probably is going to continue rehashing the story for a while. And partly that's because she's still in the resistant phase. You know, I was talking about my friend who was saying, this can't be true. When you're in the this can't be true phase, you keep trying to prove to yourself why it can't be true. And that's why you're telling the story. So an important thing for you is to realize that you can't fix her. But one of the things that happens to me when I'm listening to a too familiar story from somebody who's too close to me is that I start telling my own story. Oh, she's always like this. How can she be like this? That you have control over, your own story. And I say that, you know, there are people in my life who are difficult, not because they're bad people, they're actually very sweet people, but I'm really tired of their stories. And so I have to remind myself that hearing this story isn't going to hurt me. You know, it's like dealing with somebody with Alzheimer's. They tell you the same story over and over again. And when you know they have Alzheimer's, you can kind of say, oh, well, it's Alzheimer's. If you remember that for them it's the first time they've told it, then it's sometimes possible to come at it with a fresh ear. But it's not easy. It's really not easy.
So then, that's it, not being in a place of feeling like I can make her less angry or have any less discomfort, but just right now, just be there to listen.
Just be there. Just be there. Do not try to fix her. Because one of the things to look at that we didn't talk too much about was to look underneath whatever the primary emotion is. So it may be anger up here, but I know for me that anger is never about anger. For me, it's usually about fear. Fear that this is not true, fear that that is true. It goes to something else. So sometimes looking at whatever that something else is a way of having compassion for yourself and for the other person. So I wish you ease with that. It's difficult.
Thank you.
I have a suggestion for you also. This is a new book. It's called A Heart Full of Peace by Joseph Goldstein. It's a wonderful little book. You can see it's little. You know, fairly large type. Few pages. It is a gem about how to fill your heart with peace. It's a gem about how to live in the world of non-hate. And I highly recommend it to you. Lots of little ways of thinking about things. It's a very sweet book. So, A Heart Full of Peace. Joseph Goldstein is also a senior Vipassana teacher in the United States. He and Jack Kornfield and Sharon Salzberg started Insight Meditation Center in Barre, Massachusetts, and then Jack left there and came out and started Spirit Rock here. So Joseph is one of the senior teachers, a really wonderful man. If you ever hear, get a chance to hear him, don't pass it up. So is there anything else? I wish you all happiness and lots of non-hate. Be well.